Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Christy Rosa. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Mohammed Bilal Abid, MD, MRCP, and Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Divisions of Hematology, Oncology, and Infectious Diseases at the Medical College of Wisconsin, about his recent review paper outlining what's known about the risk of infections with CAR T-cell therapy and determinants of SARS-CoV-2 responses. CAR T-cell therapies have demonstrated unprecedented response rates in patients with relapsed or refractory hematologic malignancies. However, this modality also has been found to have distinctive short- and long-term toxicities and infection risks for those who receive it after several prior treatments such as transplant. Toxicities can include cytokine release syndrome and immune effector cell-associated neurotoxicity syndrome. Other adverse effects like long-term B-cell depletion, hypogammaglobulinemia, and cytopenia can predispose patients to severe infections and impact remission success. Risk of such infections depend upon certain patient and disease-related factors, including lymphodepletion chemotherapy regimen, the interval between cell collection and infusion, bridging therapy, CAR T-cell dose, signaling and co-stimulatory domains, and target antigen. Moreover, certain CAR T constructs may confer a higher risk or more frequent CRS than others, resulting in a higher incidence of infections. Early observational findings suggested that patients with hematologic malignancies might not achieve an acceptable response to SARS-CoV-2 vaccination. In our exclusive interview, Abid discussed immune-compromising factors that are indigenous to CAR T recipients, the immunogenic potential of different vaccines, determinants of vaccine responses, and the potential need for booster vaccine dosing in this population. Could you provide a snapshot of some of the progress that has been made with CAR T-cell therapies and hematologic malignancies? What would you say are some of the challenges faced with this modality, and what inspired you and your colleagues to put together this review paper?
Considerable progress has been made in the CAR T arena over the last decade. The focus primarily has been on improving durability of CAR T. And every new construct is more sophisticated, more advanced, harnesses newer signaling domain, co-stimulatory domains to render greater level of durability to the next-gen CAR T. Now, as we have continued to focus on durability part, the more durable CAR T becomes, the more prolonged the long-term on-target off-tumor toxicities become. Some of them are explored, some of them are not explored as much. For example, CRS and ICANS, everybody talks about it. They are a key adverse event in every toxicity endpoint in any clinical trial. What about B-cell aplasia, prolonged hypogammaglobulinemia? Prolonged cytopenia is one of them which has really not been explored. So as more and more CAR T become available, a greater level of FDA approval, they are starting to move towards more upfront setting, more frontline setting. We've got to worry about how to keep patients safe from infections that occur because of the prolonged adverse events that happen with durable CAR T.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the importance of being aware of the toxicities associated with this modality. What are some of the factors that predispose patients to infections or poor outcomes with these therapies? And what's known thus far about the varying toxicities observed between the different constructs and targets?
We could broadly classify them into three categories. Basically, we're dealing with the risks or determinants of infection post-CAR T. We could broadly classify them, the predictors, the determinants that are indigenous to CAR T construct. Second group is patient-related, and third is disease-related. So, you know, patient-related are just conventional lower, you know, poor performance status, higher comorbidity burden. There are objective criteria to look at that, mainly extrapolated from allogeneic transplant setting. Disease factors are pretty conventional, again, pretty standard. If the disease is in remission, which is unlikely in the setting of CAR T, you know, most folks who go on to receive CAR T, they have their disease is not controlled. The key determinants and the key variables associated with CAR T themselves, they are indigenous to CAR T construct, plus what's going on in the peri-CAR T period, right prior to CAR T, and what's happening right after CAR T infusion. For example, what is the dose of lymphodepletion, what is the intensity and regimen of lymphodepletion chemotherapy? The higher the dose, it creates a nice in an immune milieu to allow CAR T persistence. At the same time, a higher regimen of CAR T lymphodepletion chemotherapy prior to CAR T may predispose to prolonged cytopenia. You could have higher grade 4 CTCA grade 4 neutropenia, thrombocytopenia for prolonged duration, and we've had a couple of recent abstracts in the ASCO meeting depicting that also. The other that I do want to mention is bridging therapy, use of bridging therapy. The role is unclear. Folks who need bridging therapy may do poorly at the end. You know, one-sided folks who need bridging therapy means their disease is aggressive. So eventually they have a rapidly progressive disease. The other school of thought is, okay, if they are needing bridging, that means their disease will be put to a certain level of control prior to CAR T. So what happens between cell collection until CAR T infusion is important. Now, CAR T construct itself, whether it's forward BBE based or it's CD28 based, indigenously these signaling domains have an impact on that or rapidity of T cell expansion. With CD28, and it comes at you, boom, you get more CRS, you get more rapid onset of CRS, higher degree of CRS, higher severity of CRS, more patients experience any grade CRS. 4-1BB is a nice and slow, mellow guy, comes in, the things last longer. So, the degree of CRS is kind of lesser. So theoretically, we have not had any prospective study that compares these two constructs head to head. But there is small single center data published in two different studies that does show enough preclinical data on this topic that CD28 confers a higher degree of CRS as compared to 4-1BB. 4-1BB is associated with higher durability. We need prospective data on that, though. CRS has been shown multiple times as an independent risk factor and driver of infection. So theoretically, if 4-1BB gives you less infection, less CRS probably gives you less infections. But we have not looked at, nobody has looked at that schematically, directly correlating signaling domain and the risk of infections directly. But this could be extrapolated, obviously. And then, what happens after CAR T? So when patients develop CRS and ICANS, how are they treated? What is the cumulative dose and duration of corticosteroids that they receive? That impacts long-term, early and delayed infection risk. And then, these are some of the really real determinants of CAR T. The other that I would mention also is target antigen. The target antigen, there's no head-to-head data, but one can hypothesize based on cell surface expression patterns across B cell lineage between BCMA and CD19, for example. One could hypothesize, and that's what we focused on in our recent State of the CAR review, that while CD19 will lead to more bacterial infection, BCMA is likely to lead to more viral infection as well as overall infection. We hypothesize based on primarily preclinical data and certain degree of speculation that BCMA CARs will lead to more infection. Cumulative incidence of overall viral and fungal infections will be higher with BCMA-directed therapies, whether they are bispecific T cell engagers or CAR T, as compared to CD19.
Very important points. And shifting to the use of CAR T cell therapies during the COVID-19 pandemic, What are some of the existing concerns with leveraging this modality in this context? And what is your advice for your colleagues who are considering utilizing these therapies in practice for the patients who need them most?
First of all, we've got to stick to the basics. Folks who need CAR T, they need CAR T. So folks who need CAR T, they have nowhere else to go. They have relapse refractory disease. Majority of them have relapse after receiving another cell therapy, you know, allogeneic transplantation or autologous transplantation. So there are certain basic principles that every center should stick, and they have continued to stick to them. And then there's some, you know, higher level discussion that we conduct based on, you know, hypothetical data or, you know, some presumptions. So one is, you know, telemedicine, you know, even though, you know, there are blips, there are waves, there are better times, there are not so better times, telemedicine should remain in the core. Those folks are heavily immunocompromised. We know from there are no real sole CAR T studies that have defined outcomes, particularly survival outcomes in CAR T recipients exclusively, but there have been multiple studies from large, you know, from European centers, you know, American centers, and we published our largest study in CIBMTR earlier in the year at Lancet, and we showed that in a pooled cohort of 318 patients that included autologous transplantation, allogeneic transplantation recipients, as well as CAR T recipients, 30% died at 30 days. So, I mean, that's an excruciatingly high mortality. The aerial view would be, if despite receiving a sophisticated, durable CAR, a very engineered, advanced immune-engaging therapy, if they contract COVID-19, their chances of survival are not so good. So I would say stick to the basics. Telemedicine should remain on the core. Whether they are vaccinated or not, every effort should be made to vaccinate the patient. We'll come to that. There's a timeline. There's a specific situation through which CAR T patients should be vaccinated. All of their caregivers, all of their healthcare providers, and people around them should be vaccinated as much as possible. Imperative. Their exposure to community and to the hospital setting should be minimized. For all their follow-up should be, you know, telemedicine. Corticosteroid usage, we really know that blunts not just their T cells, but it redistributes their T cell repertoire. It blunts their response to vaccines. So corticosteroids, whether we use them for the treatment or prophylaxis of CRS or ICANS, or we use them for the treatment of COVID-19 in CAR T recipients, has to be judicious, has to be thought through prior to making that determination.
Absolutely. And what has been observed thus far regarding vaccine response in this population?
We don't have enough data right off the bat, I can tell you. I follow this. There are five studies so far, which are all primarily transplant studies, and they have included a very small subgroup of CAR T. So the data that we're getting, you know, if you were to pool all these patients, our paper is in our systematic review, is under review at this point. If we pool all those patients, they become 63 in total. And then the biggest problem with these studies is that they are not using the same immunoassay to measure antibody response. None of the studies except for one has checked cellular response. I can share with you the pooled response rate out of 41 patients across three studies that utilize the same method of detection for antibodies is about 28%, the response rate. The bigger caveat is that there's inter-assay variability. We need to know that the spike binding and neutralizing antibody titers are not validated among immunocompromised patients, any group of immunocompromised patients. In addition to inter-assay variability, I mentioned the level of humoral response that correlate with clinical protection is not known. So all of these caveats go in. I want to say that the response rate in allogeneic transplantation is somewhere between 20 to 30% at the most, and CAR T recipients are responding to SARS-CoV-2 vaccines in an even more dismal fashion.
Very interesting. And how do you approach the topic of vaccination for these patients who do need to receive CAR T-cell therapy in your practice? Do we know anything about determinants of response?
I think there are some clear knowns, extrapolated data from allo transplant or from other vaccinations to prevent other diseases, other infectious illnesses previously, a number of years ago. So when we extrapolate this, we get some hard effects. And then the other is the evolving data that I've just shared with you. What are my observations based on these data? So number one, CAR T patients, even if they received SARS-CoV-2 vaccinations prior to CAR T infusion, they should be revaccinated after CAR T infusion. Absolutely. They lose their response after CAR T. So that's rule number one, hard fact. Number two, the response rates, which are currently in a turning up, are not as good if they receive SARS-CoV-2 vaccinations within 6 months of CAR T infusion. So if they receive vaccination series, if they started the vaccination series 6 months post-CAR T, their response rates are superior, probably due to better immune reconstitution. By 6 months and over, they have better immune reconstitution, probably. Coming back to our earlier point we discussed, there are CAR T-related determinants of response. There are vaccine-related determinants of response. So that's how I would divide them. So in vaccine-related determinants, type of vaccine may matter. Let me make a hypothesis here. CAR T recipients are likely to respond better to Moderna, messenger RNA 1273, primarily because of two reasons. One, Moderna has a considerably higher messenger RNA spike content. The amount of spike content in Moderna is considerably larger, greater than Pfizer. The other is duration between two doses matter in CAR T. So 28-day versus 21-day. So my guess is because of these two reasons, CAR T recipients are likely to respond better. Seroconversion rate is likely to be higher. Durability is likely to be higher. More patients are likely to respond to Moderna rather than Pfizer. Full disclosure, I have no affiliation with any of the pharmaceutical companies during the course of this interview. So in terms of type of vaccine, in terms of messenger RNA content, intervals between CAR T and the first vaccine dose, duration between the first and the second vaccine dose, and the duration between the last vaccine dose, whether it's the second or the third, you know, any supplemental dose, aka booster, and response assessment. So all that matters. If the response was assessed, you know, right on day 14, they may not have good response. If the response was assessed farther out, they may have good response. Now, pertinent CAR T related factors that may drive responses to SARS-CoV-2 vaccine, humoral response we're dealing with here, median IgG levels at the time of vaccination, CAR T target antigen, we talked about that, and hypothetically, BCMA CARs may not respond as good, recipients may not respond as good as compared to CD19. This is theoretical hypothesis. T and B cell lymphopenia at the time of vaccination, status of the underlying disease before vaccination, prior allogeneic transplantation prior to receiving CAR T, and ongoing treatment and immunosuppression status at the time of vaccination. These are some of the things that would drive and eventually dictate the response to SARS-CoV-2 vaccine in CAR T patients.
Thank you so much for those insights. So you mentioned several challenges with the research that's currently available and expressed the need for more data. Where should efforts be focused going forward? And what would you say your take-home message is for your colleagues who are tuning in?
No matter how durable a CAR is, if your CAR T recipient, we see this in clinical practice. Once they develop COVID-19, their mortality risk is high. We know this from data that we have so far. It's not the best. So we've got to protect them. We've got to protect them from developing COVID-19, from contracting COVID-19. That's one. Some mitigation. So I make a suggestion here that despite the number of additional doses that there is, if a CAR T recipient do not mount any humoral response to two doses, what are the chances he'll respond to the third dose? What are the chances he'll respond to the fourth dose? So I don't necessarily like to call the third dose as a booster dose because it may or may not boost your immune response, but a third or a booster dose may give our CAR T patients an unfortunate false sense of security to the point that behavior may start to change. And that shouldn't happen. They should continue to be counseled to continue to do isolation, mitigation strategies, continue to keep up with all kind of behavioral changes that have been in place over the last year and a half. So that's imperative. Two, the BMT-CTN in collaboration with CIBMTR and House at our institution is doing a prospective study, very nicely designed. And then some of the other centers are probably doing prospective studies as well. I know Israelis are doing a phenomenal study at this point in time. We've got to use immunoassays that have been validated and have been shown to correlate with protective immunity. Otherwise, they are just numbers. They are just numbers. So there's got to be homogeneity in reporting. People in the cellular therapy community and transplant community need to come together and standardize the protocols of these prospective studies, the response assessment methods, timelines, durations, interval of assessment. And last but not the least, we know for a fact that cellular response, T-cell responses, to SARS-CoV-2 are equally important as antibody responses. And as we can see on all these five studies, the entire focus has been on checking antibodies. We also need to focus in a kind of more all-inclusive, concerted effort moving forward and really focusing on preventing our very vulnerable COVID-19, CAR T patients from developing COVID-19.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit. And follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.